This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. It's been 322 days since Hurricane Maria made landfall on the island of Puerto Rico. It's been a long and arduous process to rebuild homes, to restock shelves, and to turn the lights back on. But one controversial part of the island's strategy for recovery, the rush to privatize public services.
Deseo informarte.
I wish to inform you of one of the initiatives that will have the greatest impact for the construction of a new and modern Puerto Rico. During the next few days, we will begin the process to sell the shares of the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority to companies, which will transform the energy system to one that is modern, efficient, and less costly for the people.
That's Puerto Rico's Governor Ricardo Rosselló addressing the privatization of the electrical grid in January. A month later, in February, changes to Puerto Rico's education system were also announced.
We will begin implementing the Alliance Schools, known in some jurisdictions as charter schools.
And now, new reporting reveals plans for the island's corrections department to outsource some of its operations to a private prison company, thousands of miles away on the United States mainland. One-third of the island's prison population, or around 3,200 inmates, could be sent to the U.S. mainland in 2019 through contracts with the private prison company CoreCivic. Oliver Lachlan is a senior reporter with The Guardian, and he traveled to Bayamón, Puerto Rico in July to find out more about the island's plans to move inmates out. Oliver, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me.
So you visited the Puerto Rico prison system. Give us a sense of what the conditions are in Bayamón, the facilities that you've seen, and just the big picture there.
So I visited the Bayamón Correctional Complex back in July. It's one of the biggest correctional complexes on the island. There's about 1,700 inmates there. I would describe the conditions there as being pretty old. So a number of the wings that I visited were using sort of paper cards to keep tabs on the inmates. There weren't computers being used, that sort of thing. And this is part of the justification that the corrections department offer to say that, you know, we have an old kind of crumbling prison system that needs updating, that we need to look after our inmates better. And so this is the solution they're putting out there. A huge part of it is about cost cutting as well. And so they're planning to start sending inmates over at the beginning of 2019, and it will be 1,200 to start off with, and then in batches of 700 for the next 3 years.
So when you went down to Puerto Rico, you met with Eric Rolón, who's the secretary of the Puerto Rico Corrections and Rehabilitation Department. And let's take a listen to the reason he gave for the plan.
Due to the economic situation that we have in the government, for us, it's an initiative that represents a very cost-effective way to provide our service.
So he's focusing on cost. Tell us what you think about that, Oliver.
Well, yeah, exactly. So that's the justification that he gave. They hope that this plan is going to save about $45 million a year. And the Corrections Department has been instructed by the Fiscal Oversight Board, which is an elected control board that basically dictates Puerto Rico's economic affairs, to save hundreds of million dollars over the next 5 years. When I was there, a lot of the people I spoke to spoke about the sort of concerns around cost as being a secondary issue to inmate well-being. And a lot of the inmates that I spoke to were very concerned about the idea of being forced into these transfers. Civil liberties groups say that even if the corrections secretary, as he does, says that these will be voluntary transfers, there's not really such thing as a voluntary agreement you can enter into when you're a ward of the state.
And I want to get into more of those details in a second, because one of the pieces in your piece showed that one prisoner said that thousands of prisoners are against this move. Is that right?
Yeah, so one of the sort of key cultural underpinnings of the Puerto Rico prison system is gang culture. And when we were there, we were led into a medium security wing in the Bayamón Correctional Facility that was stratified. There were five wards that were stratified by gang affiliation. So we were led into one that was run by a group called Asociación Nieta, which is the largest prison association in the country. It was formed in the late 1970s, has connections to the independence movement, and a number of reviews have sort of found that it operates basically a shadow system of government. They say they have 6,000 members all across the island inside prison. That's obviously two-thirds of the entire prison population. And this guy that I spoke to, who numerous prison officials told me was speaking as a spokesman for this association, which has a very rigid power structure, said that the entire association is opposed to this move.
We're talking about the outsourcing of Puerto Rican inmates to private prisons on the mainland, and I'm speaking with Oliver Lachlan from The Guardian. Tell us a little bit about the contract. So Puerto Rico Department of Corrections is signing a contract with CoreCivic. And we've heard here in the United States a lot about CoreCivic. They run private ICE detention centers. Tell us more about who they are.
So CoreCivic are one of the largest private prison contractors in the country. It's been quite difficult to try and get real details about the contract itself. Corrections Secretary Hollande, it hasn't actually been signed yet, so that's a major point. It's got to be approved by the Oversight Board. He's told me that it's 99% there, and that was a few weeks ago, and yesterday they said they're going to sign it in the next few days. CoreCivic haven't been particularly forthcoming about, you know, how much this contract is going to be worth, the period of time that they're going to sign it for, and that sort of thing. But we know the facility that they're aiming to use. So it's the La Palma Detention Center in Eloy, Arizona, which is obviously thousands of miles away from Puerto Rico. It has been used in the past by the state government of California to hold inmates on an out-of-state program. There have been a whole raft of issues associated with the conditions there. 2010 audit identified numerous issues with security and safety concerns, the overuse of solitary confinement, and that really is part of a broader trend of the way in which private prisons operate in this country. In 2016, the Obama administration published a review of the use of private prisons in the federal incarceration system, which basically found across the board that they were less safe and more punitive than those operated by the public.
So obviously, civil rights advocates have many concerns about moving these prisoners. And among them, I'm wondering, you not only separate the prisoners from their family, but you also separate them from their attorneys and any other, you know, legal help that they might be able to access. What are some of the other concerns that civil rights advocates have? You mentioned prisoners, in many cases, are ward of the state, which would indicate that they really can't make a decision to voluntarily leave this prison, right?
Yeah, well, that's what the ACLU of Puerto Rico say. They basically said this is state-sponsored human trafficking, which was quite an eye-grabbing way of describing what's going on. I think there are, aside from the issues of consent, which is obviously a major one, and the Corrections Secretary has absolutely insisted that this will be a voluntary program, and that even though they're going to be contracted to send over a certain number of inmates, they will only be voluntary people who decide to go for it.
But see, but that right there doesn't make sense, right? There's a contract for X thousand number of people, and then all those people are going to be voluntary. So if nobody volunteers, then what happens?
Well, so he told me when I interviewed him a few weeks ago that they'd had 1,200 expressions of interest. That was the phrase that he used. So they'd surveyed the entire inmate population of 9,000 people. 1,200 people said they were interested in doing it. It transpired that they had been briefed on the wrong prisons at that point. So they had briefed them on prisons in Texas and in Mississippi, which are no longer being considered. They then revised the number down to about 850, but wouldn't tell me why. So yeah, it's perplexing. I don't exactly understand what an expression of interest means, but there's an insistence that this will be voluntary, and I guess we kind of have to wait and see how that'll play out.
When you were in Puerto Rico, you spoke to an inmate, and his name was Joseph Villalobos, and he's in the Bayamón facility. Let's listen to what he had to say.
My mom, my sister, my three kids are here. So if it's voluntarily, I'd rather stay here. Because here I can work.
Yeah.
I got, you know, everything is developed for me. I really don't want to go.
Yeah.
But once you're in jail and you got that sentence on you, they dictate the rules, you know.
Yeah.
If the COs come and say, hey, pick up your things, okay, you're leaving, I will make no no movement. I pick up my things and I go. Because for you to go home as quickly as you can, you got to obey by the rules. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Joseph.
So Joseph kind of, to me, underlined a lot of the concerns that inmates that I spoke to had about this program. So he was in there, he was serving a 26-year sentence for a felony offense. He didn't go into too much detail about what it was about. He said it was a non-violent felony offense. He was 7 years in, and he had served about 4 or 5 years on a high-security wing, so he was on 22-hour lockdowns a day. He graduated through the rehabilitative process that is basically mandated by the Puerto Rican Constitution. So he was now out in the minimum security wing. And really, when he spoke to me, it kind of underlined to me this very palpable sense of unease that a lot of inmates that I spoke to exuded the whole time, which was, you know, we've been told this is voluntary. None of us want to go. So I didn't meet a single inmate that said they wanted to go. But we are aware that we're essentially powerless in this situation. And if we're told we have to, then we'll do it because we want to get out.
Has this been attempted in the past, anything to this scale or the removal of prisoners at this level?
So Puerto Rico has attempted to offshore inmates on two previous occasions. So in 1993, when there was chronic overcrowding in the entire prison system on the island, the government sanctioned the move of 500 inmates to a rural facility in Minnesota. And that program lasted about a couple of years. And there were sort of numerous complaints about the food that was on offer, the fact that all the guards spoke English and didn't speak Spanish, lack of educational programs. So eventually that program was mothballed. All the inmates were moved back to the island. Again, in 2012, they tried to ship a bunch of inmates to Cushing in Oklahoma. There was a riot that ensued. It was the same number of people, so about 480 people. A riot that ensued, and they had to end that one too. So I asked Corrections Secretary Rollon about this, and his answer was kind of perplexing. He basically said to me, we understand this has failed in the past, but we think that because this is a more ambitious program that we're going to try and transfer more people, it will somehow magically work.
So we did reach out to both the Puerto Rico state government and to CoreCivic. And by the time we're broadcasting, the Puerto Rican government has not yet responded to our request for comment. But CoreCivic did send along a comment, and I want to read it for you. And for our listeners, you can read the entirety of their comment on our website. But let me read this for you. CoreCivic is committed to the safety and dignity of every individual entrusted to our care. It's unfortunate that The Guardian chose to sensationalize the very real challenges Puerto Rico is facing rather than fostering a serious, fact-based discussion on how those challenges might be addressed. The fact is that CoreCivic helps our government partners solve problems in ways they simply could not do alone. Your response?
Well, first of all, I would say I work for The Guardian. We take facts very, very seriously, and facts are sacred. That's what we say. I also approached CoreCivic a number of weeks ago with 8 very specific questions about the contract, about exactly how it's going to be managed, and they came back with a very generic response, which is included in my article.
They also added that they follow all the legal requirements for running private prisons. So I guess the question is, how would you respond to that if they say we're going to take care of everything and there's no reason for concern?
Well, I guess if you just look at the use of the La Palma facility over the past years that it's been used by the state of California, there have been chronic issues that have been identified in audit reports, which I've mentioned earlier, but I'll go back to them again. It's issues about overuse of solitary confinement, not providing enough programs for Hispanic inmates, which I think is an incredibly important thing to raise at this point, not allowing for proper video conferencing with families, which again is going to be a major issue. This is a 2010 report, but later audits have also spoken about poor healthcare facilities in the prison. So I guess, you know, when Roland talks about oversight and ensuring the constitutional rights of these prisoners, we really need to know exactly how the audit process is going to work with the Puerto Rican government as well.
Oliver Lachlan is a senior reporter with The Guardian. Oliver, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
And The Guardian is doing a 3-day series on this and other issues in Puerto Rico, and we'll link to it on thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.